Thank you, Bella. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Almirall Half Year 2019 Financial Results Conference Call. This presentation was released earlier this morning and is available on our corporate website. Presenting today, we have Peter Guenter, Chief Executive Officer, David Nieto, Executive Vice President, CFO, and Bhushan Hardas, Executive Vice President, Research and Development, CSO. Peter will make some introductory remarks about the first half and later come back to sum up. David will provide you with details on the financial, and Bhushan will update you on our pipeline. After that, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we move ahead, I would like to remind you that certain statements that we will make in this presentation are forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements reflect Almirall judgment and analysis only as of today, and results may differ materially from current expectations based on a number of factors affecting our businesses. With that, I will pass you over to our CEO, Peter Guenter.
Thanks a lot, Pablo, for the introduction, and good morning to everyone on the call. I am pleased to say that the business is continuing to perform well with excellent momentum from our growth drivers, which were recently launched, as well as our key brands. In the first half of the year, we continued to see good growth in our European psoriasis franchise, with growth momentum in Skilarence and positive initial uptake of Ilumetri in its first country, that is Germany. I will provide you with some additional details on both in a moment. Since we launched Seysara in the U.S. in January, we have been very encouraged by the strong initial data, and the product has become the number one brand in the U.S. acne oral treatment, achieving both good coverage and sales volume. I will also elaborate on this shortly. The late-stage pipeline is progressing well. As you are aware, we exercised the lebrikizumab option, acquiring the rights to develop and commercialize the product in the EU. We are very pleased to add another significant product opportunity to reinforce our pipeline potential and drive future growth. As the business continues to progress well, we are reflecting that in our guidance by upgrading the EBITDA range for 2019 to 300 million-310 million euro from previously 290 million-300 million euro. This is a result of good performance from our growth brands, as well as continued discipline on costs. In summary, we're very pleased with the momentum generated by the business during Q2. The next slide enables you to see how we're moving forward in executing our strategy and transforming our portfolio with innovative products in medical dermatology. We have launched three products in our key markets, where we continue to see our psoriasis franchise gaining momentum with Skilarence and Ilumetri rolling out across Europe. Furthermore, Seysara, which launched in January, continues to gain penetration in the United States OAB markets. Alongside these launches, we have advanced tirbanibulin, for which we have positive phase III clinical trial results for two studies in actinic keratosis. In addition, this quarter, we have strengthened our late-stage pipeline by adding lebrikizumab to the portfolio, and we're very excited by the potential of this product in Europe, which will be entering phase III clinical trials later this year. We continue to execute on our strategy and look for relevant opportunities for our portfolio, adding future growth drivers for the business. We are very pleased to see our recent launches gaining good momentum in their respective markets. Skilarence has achieved almost 80% of share in Germany within the fumaric acid esters class, and net sales have doubled year-on-year, with further countries to launch in the coming months. Ilumetri has performed well in the quarter, with strong unit growth quarter-on-quarter. Since launch, over 1,600 units have been sold and over 800 patients treated. We are encouraged by this momentum, which we expect to continue. Seysara, having only been launched in January, has already achieved the number one branded product in the U.S. oral acne market. This is an important milestone, and we continue to see the product continue to gain penetration in the broad OAB market, with this quarter achieving over 5,000 prescriptions a week, which amounts to 1.5% market share. If you were to focus solely on the dermatologists market, we are at 5.7% market share in the broad OAB market. As you can see from the following charts, Skilarence continues to progress well with impressive year-on-year unit growth and excellent quarterly momentum, resulting in doubling of net sales growth year-on-year. We continue to gain market share with strong performances in Germany and the Netherlands, which is an important market due to the significant previous DMF experience there. To give some color on our recent country launches in Spain and Italy, the last few weeks, unit sales for each country have been oscillating between 200 and 300 units a week, each country being larger than the UK based on the recent weeks. We have been busy with the rollout in Europe, and this will continue in the coming quarters. Since the launch of Ilometri in Germany at the end of last year, we continue to see positive initial uptake with another quarter of solid growth momentum. You've seen the patient takeoff graph before. It compares the first 6 full months of sales since launch of Ilometri versus the 3 most recent launches in Germany, 1 IL-23 and 2 IL-17s. The common time is 0, with month 1 representing the first full month of sales, which for Ilometri was December. You can clearly see how well the launch has been received, with product sales continuing to surpass most recent IL-17s on a common time 0. Over 1,600 accumulative unit sales have been achieved in a relatively short period of time. These initial quarters are encouraging and give us confidence that Ilometri will be another important growth driver for Almiral. In terms of launch planning, we are on track with the subsequent launches across Europe. Having recently received approval by NICE, we have launched in the UK market, and with approval by Swissmedic, we will launch in Switzerland shortly. Rollout continues throughout the year and into 2020 as we continue to make a number of key market introductions. On to Seysara, it's clear that the initial uptake of Seysara in the US has been strong following the launch in January, an important milestone for Almiral. Having already achieved number 1 branded product in the US oral acne market, we are encouraged by the initial prescription data. We have already achieved 57% coverage at the end of Q2, of which 35% was unrestricted. This is a good start compared with the benchmarks we have set, and the product generated over 19,000 total prescriptions in June. In the bar chart, you can see that within the last 12 weeks, we are gaining market share in both the branded and also non-branded segment of the broad OAB market. We have seen already some improvement in the gross to net that will continue in the next coming quarters. We foresee additional source of growth for Seysara by gaining market share in the non-branded segment, where there is a high volume of products lacking innovation in the category. KOLs and patients continue to give excellent feedback, both on the utility and effectiveness of having an oral antibiotic approved for a wide age range of patients. Our promotional education program has reached over 2,100 providers, and this positive feedback is captured in the data, with more than 3,800 dermatologists prescribing Seysara in the second quarter. With that, I will turn it over to David for the financial review.
Thank you, Peter, and good morning to everyone. We deliver what we believe a very solid set of financial results for the first half of the year. Key highlights are the following. Total revenue and net sales grew by 16% at constant exchange rate, boosted by our recent launches and the acquired product from Allergan portfolio. Positive evolution of the gross margin with year-on-year improvement of 280 basis points at constant exchange rates driven by our improved product mix. Despite the significant investment in key product launches, we continue to exhibit good cost control, achieving flat SG&A level in absolute value versus last year. With this, we deliver strong operating leverage with EBITDA growth of 73% and significant year-on-year margin improvements. Also, our operating cash flow was up to 108 million. On the key challenges, we experienced a weak performance of our US legacy products in Q2 and also had to true up an accrual related to government program of the ex-Allergan portfolio. Despite a weaker Q2 in the US, current year-to-date performance is indicative of our expectation for the full year, which is to deliver in the US net sales between 165 to 170 million euros. On the next chart, you can see the main contributors to net sales for the first half of 2019. I want to highlight the strong contribution, like Peter said, from our new product launches as they gain momentum in the respective markets. We expect meaningful contribution of these products as we continue their rollout across geographies. Turning next to the P&L, net sales increased by 16% in constant exchange rate, benefiting from the performance of the medical dermatology portfolio. As expected, other income was higher given the milestone from AstraZeneca received during Q2. Gross margin continued to show a year-over-year increase driven by favorable product mix. Regarding R&D, we continue to invest at a sustained rate. However, it remained flat as a percentage of sales around 10%. For the full year, we now expect to be between 11 to 12% of net sales, which is below Admiral long-term objective of 12 to 13%. This is driven by the fact that some of our R&D investments are financed through the balance sheet. For instance, this is the case of Dermira in licensing and phase three. All of this led to a strong EBITDA growth of 53% in constant exchange rate. Regarding SG&A evolution, you can see in the first half of the year, we continue to manage SG&A expenses tightly while investing in our new product launches. We had meaningful productivity measures in place that deliver over 20 million savings. This also came from our prioritization towards medical dermatology and the divestment of our aesthetics business. All these savings were reinvested into our new product launches. Going down the P&L, the contribution of growth, improved product mix, and strong cost control provided operating leverage with EBITDA and EBIT margins both increasing significantly. With this, our normalized earnings per share increased to 44 cents per share, up 46% on a year-over-year basis. This is in line or even slightly better than forecasted at the time of the Allergan acquisition. Looking at the balance sheet, I simply want to highlight two elements. The increase of the intangible asset following the Dermira payment for lebrikizumab, as well as Athenex's continued investment. An increase in the accounts receivable, mainly linked to AstraZeneca milestone and royalties to be collected in the short term, as well as the acquisition of Allergan portfolio in the U.S. Let's take a look at the cash flow statement. We deliver a strong operating cash flow generating 108 million, which is something we are pleased with. Investment includes the Dermira exercise option fee and the Athenex down payment. During Q2, we also had the disbursement of the dividend for shareholders who elected to receive it in cash. Finally, on the capital allocation, as we are talking about cash flow, let me reiterate our focus regarding annual capital allocation. First, our priorities goes to invest behind new product launches, building our psoriasis franchise in Europe and our acne business in the U.S. Second, we are focused in strengthening our R&D pipeline in medical dermatology, which is at the core of being a specialty pharma company. This includes the in-licensing of late-stage assets, like we recently did with Dermira for lebrikizumab, which Bouchard will talk to you about. Third, we want to provide a secure, stable dividend to shareholders. As a sign of this, we recently increased our dividend by 7%. Finally, we are focused on M&A accretive deal that will reinforce our core business and continue to bring critical mass to further leverage our fixed cost base. I will now pass it over to Bhushan to discuss updates in the R&D pipeline.
Thank you, David. We have few updates on our late-stage pipeline that I would like to go over. Regards to regulatory filing, in Q3, we will file ALM-12834 for the treatment of onychomycosis, and in Q4, ALM-12845 for androgenic alopecia. Both filings are for EU. You must have noticed that we have taken out ALM-12734, which was in early development for psoriasis. After reviewing the latest data, the company has decided to discontinue the program as it did not meet our criteria. There is no impairment associated with this program since we do not activate early developments in our balance sheets. Also, we strategically reprioritized our pipeline, and as a result, we will not move forward with ALM-12845 development in the United States for androgenic alopecia. This comes as a result of different FDA requirements for clinical trials as compared to EU. And most importantly, we are focusing on phase 3 clinical trial for lebrikizumab, a recent acquisition for the EU market, which will be initiated in coming months. As you know, we exercised our option on lebrikizumab following review of the phase 2b data. Here, I want to highlight the key aspects of the rationale behind the transaction and why we believe this is a compelling investment for Almirall. Atopic dermatitis is an underserved and a growing market where there is a need for new and differentiated therapies. Currently, there is only one biologic approved for moderate to severe atopic dermatitis. With lebrikizumab in our pipeline, it gives Almirall a unique opportunity to help these patients live a better life. Analysis of the phase 2b clinical data, and given that lebrikizumab has a high affinity to cytokine IL-13, which we'll go in details later, and a recently published publication by University of Michigan, which says that atopic dermatitis is IL-13 dominant disease, suggests it will not only be well-differentiated product, but has the potential to be best in disease therapy for atopic dermatitis. With this attribute and opportunity in the marketplace, we anticipate peak sales of approximately 450 million euros. This is an excellent opportunity for Almirall to access a late-stage pipeline product in an indication with a significant unmet medical need. Now let us have a look at how cytokine 13 and how it binds to two receptors as shown in the figure in this slide. Cytokine IL-13 binds to heterodimeric receptor, which is IL-4 receptor alpha, IL-13 receptor alpha 1, leads to activation of downstream signaling pathway and the Th2 inflammation. By contrast, IL-13 receptor alpha 2, a monomeric receptor, is thought to act as a decoy receptor, neutralizing cytokine IL-13 and therefore having no role in Th2 inflammatory pathway. Lebrikizumab binds to cytokine IL-13 with a very high affinity. As seen in the chart above, it's less than 10 picomole as compared to tralokizumab, which is 58 and 165 in two different papers. I just want to make one point here. Smaller the number, higher the affinity here. It binds at an epitope that prevents the formation of IL-13, IL-4 receptor alpha, IL-13 receptor alpha 1 signaling complex, thereby blocking the downstream pathway, but not the IL-13 receptor 2 decoy receptor. This shows the specificity as well as affinity of this product. Pralocizumab prevents the binding of IL-13 to both receptors. Therefore, it is possible that given very high affinity and increased specificity, lifacizumab might result in a better, much better outcome for the patients with atopic dermatitis. Now, if we look at more details at lifacizumab phase 2 clinical data, the phase 2b clinical trial was designed to evaluate safety and efficacy of lifacizumab compared with placebo in patients with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis. Each of the lifacizumab dose evaluated showed a dose-dependent and statistically significant improvement in the primary endpoint. The primary endpoint was percentage change in EASI, EASI score from baseline to week 16. EASI represents eczema area severity index that takes into account area as well as the severity of the signs of the disease. This is evaluated by the investigator or the physician. Regulators require investigators' global assessment, which is IGA, and EASI 75 as a primary efficacy endpoint. But EASI 90 is a measure very high hurdle to overcome. The data, as seen in the chart above, here shows a very good response in EASI 90 with both 250 milligrams 4 weeks and every 2 weeks. If you look at the charts above, it shows with every 4 weeks 36% and every 2 weeks 44%, and the placebo being 11%. The compelling results observed in the improvement of itch will be leveraged in the design of phase 3 clinical trial to set us apart from currently available treatments of atopic dermatitis. If you look at the chart, every 4 weeks we have 77%, and in every 2 weeks it is 70% as compared to 27% in the placebo. The study results confirm that lifacizumab offers superior efficacy and safety to proceed to the phase 3 pivotal clinical trial. As you can see, the rationale behind executing the option is compelling, with the potential of being differentiated and possibly best in disease therapy. In terms of the timeline, we are on target to initiate the phase 3 clinical trial in coming months and launch in early 2023. We are currently working on collaboration with our partners, Dermira, who has the rights to the product in the U.S. market, to design the phase 3 trial program. Once the design is confirmed, we will update the market. One important point I would like to make here: the key takeaway from the phase 2b study is that compelling improvement in reduction in itch, which was observed by the patient. Itch being the most important symptom that significantly affects patients' quality of life and many, many comorbidities. Phase 3 clinical trial will be designed with patient centricity to set us apart from currently available treatments for atopic dermatitis. With that, I will hand it over to Peter.
Thanks a lot, Dushan. So, as you have clearly heard from us this morning, we have delivered a strong operational performance, and the business continues to perform well. Excellent momentum continues into the second half. We are confident in Almirall's growth drivers, Skilarence, Ilumetri, and Seysara, to continue their good growth pattern for the rest of the year. Furthermore, as we have heard from Bhushan, our late-stage pipeline has been significantly reinforced with the addition of lebrikizumab. As part of our strategy, we remain fully focused on searching for additional external opportunities to further complement this growth profile and generate sustainable value for shareholders. To conclude the presentation, we are upgrading EBITDA guidance to a range of 300 to 310 million euro from 290 to 300 million euro previously. This is aligned with the strong operational performance as the business continues to perform well. So with that, I'll hand it back to Pablo for the Q&A.
Thank you, Peter. Bella, back to you for the Q&A, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, please press star 1 if you wish to ask a question. Your first question comes from the line of Casey Arikatla. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. I have several of them. I'll ask the first one. On the true-ups, can you quantify the true-up impact in the quarter, and was it related to any one particular product in the U.S.? And also, is this a one-off, or do you expect this to recur going forward? I'll ask the second one later. Thank you.
Yeah. So, David, can you answer the question?
Yeah, thank you, Casey. I'm hesitant to give you a quantification of the true-up. What I can tell you is that the first half of the year it was a true-up between Q1 and Q2, let's say, and the first half of the year represents, I would say, the full picture that you should expect. It was basically a true-up on the ex-Allergan portfolio. A couple of product mix came a little bit different than we expected. But nothing, I would say, to worry for the first half of the year as a whole, and also for the full year, as I said. I think we are well on track, for the full year. And again, our commitment in the U.S. stay intact, and we are delivering as expected, or even better, as I just mentioned at the time of the EPS. So again, I think we have said we'll be in the U.S. delivering 165 to 170 million euros in total net sales and revenues, and I think this is a strong performance.
Thank you for that. My second question on Axon, do you still expect generics to be launched in the fourth quarter of this year, or has that timing changed? The reason I ask is I see that Taro has now received approval for ANDA. For their ANDA, do you expect them to launch still in 4Q? And also, how many products do you expect for 2019 and 2020 in terms of competition? Thank you.
Yeah, Casey, it's Peter. Let me take that question. So in terms of generic update on Axon 7.5, perhaps two or three points. Number one, we do expect now impact of generics by the end of the quarter, so basically by the end of this year. We have signed a settlement with Taro, of which, of course, the details are confidential. I cannot tell you. But I think that the deal we have, the settlement we have signed with Taro is a mutually, satisfactory settlement. Otherwise, obviously, we wouldn't have settled. Anticipate impact of generics by the end of the year or the end of the quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Trung Hine. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi, guys. Just a couple from me, if I can. Firstly, can you tell us how many Seysara patients are currently treatment naive and how many are switch patients? And then secondly, touching upon the last point, how should we think about the underlying sales of that older U.S. dermatology portfolio going forward? Thanks very much.
So thanks for the questions. On Seysara, you can take as a rule of thumb that this is a relatively short-term treatment, I would say on average 3 to 4 months treatment, And of course, as you go out of the starting blocks, the vast, vast majority of those patients are actually treatment naive. And it's true that as we move on further during the year and next year, we will have a little bit of switch of existing patients on, for example, generic doxycycline, and then moved on to Seysara. But for the time being, the performance you see is really treatment naive. On the legacy portfolio, so you have to take into account, of course, you know, that all those products are relatively promotional sensitive, and we took a very clear choice here to you know, to push as hard as we could to Seysara, but also Aczone 7.5. And it's true that the former legacy products or the former Aqua have, of course, decreased a little bit faster than we anticipated. But at the same time, they have become now relatively very small part of our portfolio. So that's the one thing I could say. Well, the other thing I can tell you is if you look sequentially, second quarter for this particular ex-Aqua legacy products, and you would look sequentially at Q2 this year versus Q1 this year, you see actually a relative stabilization. So I think that the big decrease on that legacy portfolio came in the first quarter of the year, that now we are looking more at the stabilization, of course, albeit on a lower level than it was last year. Right?
Thanks.
Thank you. Next question.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. And your next question comes from the line of Lucy Codrington. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my question. I just noticed that the coverage now for Seysara is nearing your upgraded target that you outlined at 1Q. I was just wondering how you're expecting coverage now, if you're still just targeting 60% for the full year. And then secondly, for Skilarence, you're now tracking slightly ahead of the 30 million run rate outlined at the beginning of the year. How are you expecting performance to evolve during the second half? Thank you.
So thanks for the questions, Lucy. So first on the coverage rate, it's true that we're very happy with what we have achieved so far in the first half with the 60% plus total coverage, of which roughly half is actually without any step edits or limitations or you know, prior authorization. I think that what you should expect moving forward in the second half is a still gradual increase of the coverage, but not very significant, because most of those negotiations have taken place, of which, you know, some ended up signing a deal successfully, others not. But of course, moving then into 2020, we will of course try to get back to those plans for which we still don't have coverage, and try to crack the nut in terms of coverage for next year. But all in all, very satisfactory performance so far in terms of coverage. For Skilarence, we don't give individual guidance for the year, but you have seen the momentum, which is really excellent. We have the two strongholds, which are Germany and Holland. But the good news is really also that some of those DMF naive countries like Italy and Spain start to really, getting up nicely up to speed. As I mentioned in my comments, we have now weekly sales in those two countries, which are actually higher than the UK, which, as you know, is a notoriously conservative market for any new product. So I wouldn't worry too much about that, but what we're really focused on is those DMF-naive countries to really also make Skilarence a meaningful product in the treatment of moderate to severe psoriasis in those markets.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Isabel Carvalho. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi, good morning. My first question is related to the EBITDA guidance. If you can please split the contributions to this upgrade. Second question is related to if you are expecting further price actions in the U.S. coming from the regulation. Finally, on the balance sheet, if you are comfortable with your previous guidance in terms of net debt to EBITDA. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Isabel, for the questions on the EBITDA guidance. Well, basically, it is two factors, right? It's the very good performance of the launches, and as you have seen also on the cost side, you have seen in the slides of David, the SG&A is very well controlled. Also, the R&D expenses are controlled, although there we have, of course, the element of the balance sheet that we put to work, for example, the lebrikizumab. On class actions, I'm not 100% sure what are you referring to, but we had one or two settlements earlier this year. But and then on the balance sheet, David, if you can take that question.
Yeah, maybe Isabella would ask you to repeat the question on the class action. I think you were referring more to the settlement with the U.S. government, and maybe also if you can repeat the last question, we could barely hear you on the line.
Yes, I think you were targeting to 2x net debt to EBITDA by the end of the year, and I was wondering with this new EBITDA guidance, what are you expecting more or less in terms of net debt to EBITDA?
No, you're talking about net debt, right? Yes, okay. So I think on our net debt, you know, our guidance to be at about 1.5x net debt to EBITDA ratio has not changed, and that's what we have, you know, provided as a guidance or has a, you know, a forecast going into the end of the year. And then basically, as you can imagine, that we have now got into lebrikizumab, and of course, despite the lebri investment, this is where we think we're going to end up at the end of the year. And again, giving high EBITDA compensate for some of the investment we're doing on the balance sheet, and of course, you have to imagine that we're making our choices here to make sure that we are financially responsible. When we use a balance sheet, we try to use less the P&L, etc., and then 1.5x. Net debt to EBITDA is what we're aiming for to the end of the year. And regarding the class action, I think you were referring to the two U.S. settlements that happened for reasons of 13 and 14, if I'm not wrong, promotional compliance. Those are behind us. I can tell you that our compliance program, and I don't want to talk for Peter here, but basically from a compliance standpoint, we are at the top of what you would expect for a pharma company. And everyone around the company, around this table, is fully committed to comply with everything that is needed to be compliant going forward.
Thank you. Next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Trung Hine. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi, sorry, just another one from me. On the phase 3 trial design of Lebri, can you just give us a bit more insight into patient recruitment for that trial, given the failure in asthma? Is there a high percentage of atopic dermatitis comorbidity in asthma patients? Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I'll pass that question on to Bouchard.
As I said in my talk, we are expecting to start the trial in coming weeks. Today, we don't see any problem in recruiting. There is going to be comorbidity. We have accounted for that. Once we have the final design, we will definitely come here and let you know a lot more in details about the phase 3 trial.
One complimentary or additional comment on the comorbidity between severe asthma and let's say, moderate to severe atopic dermatitis, which we are developing, or we will develop the product in, you have to take into account roughly a 20% overlap. So in other words, only 20%, or the other way of saying it is that 80% of our patients of moderate to severe atopic dermatitis do not have severe asthma, right? So to your question in terms of available patients, whether that is for the clinical development or commercially, we're not worried at all by that concomitant severe asthma.
Excellent. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jaime Escribano. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hello. Good morning. So two questions from my side. The first one regarding AstraZeneca LamaLaba launch. Do you have any update on that, or do you have any hint on when can they start selling it in the U.S.? And my second question is regarding the alopecia product. If I didn't hear right, so you are not going to launch it in the U.S.? You are going to launch it, or you are filing only in Europe? My question would be if there is any opportunity to license or to sell what you, all the works you've done so far, for any other pharma to launch it in the U.S., or this is not on the table. Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks, Jaime, for the questions. Let me take the second one first, and I'll defer to David for the launch in the U.S. of the LamaLaba. So you are totally right. So we are not going to develop the product for the U.S., so we will file it for Europe. But obviously, we are looking at options to maximize the value of the asset. So your point is exactly right. So we will, of course, explore the options and to see if we could find a commercial or a development partner and then also later a commercial partner to consider developing and launching the product in the U.S. But, of course, we have no guarantee that we would find such a partner. The first question was on the LamaLaba launch in the U.S., David.
Yes. So the launch of the combo, not exactly LamaLaba, was approved, I would say, early Q2 this year for the U.S., and it's AstraZeneca and its partner Circassia, which are about to launch in the U.S. I think the information we have, and which is publicly available, is about the launch early October. That's what we're targeting, and this is what they have been also getting the market as a listed company. And regarding LamaLaba, I think this is early stage asset also that we usually don't comment on. So I think you were more referring to the U.S. combo launch.
To the combo. To the combo.
No, that's fine. I think the answer is October launch.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Guilherme Fantau. Your line's open. You may ask your question.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for taking my questions. Just two small, if I may. One related to some extraordinary losses that report 7.7 million, if you could provide more color on what's the nature of this. And second, in terms of phasing of cash flow throughout the year, how should we think in terms of split between Q3 and Q4? Thanks.
I think I will take both questions, Peter, if that's fine. So the other cost that is below EBITDA, about 7.7 million, is linked to a couple of things. The first one is about legal fees linked to settlement. I think Peter indicated a settlement that we did, which came from the acquired business. That's part of it. And the second is about, you know, again, maybe the last asset in the aesthetics business that we had to basically get out of it, which we took an impairment. Nothing to do with Fermi. Was an agreement that we had on another product. But all of this is 7.7 million of other costs, right? Below EBITDA is what it is. So this is the two main and only amounts in that line. Regarding the cash flow, I think you should expect an operating cash flow. You know, the year-to-date performance is what we should expect. We should expect for the year. And let's don't forget that we will have some. You know, the combo milestone that we expect in the second half of the year that should improve that. But basically, you know, let's see how AstraZeneca is going to launch in Q4, and let's see how the timing of that combo milestone coming through Q4 happens, or maybe slightly delayed to Q1, but we expect that also to come to the end of the year. So year-to-date performance is really based on operating cash flow as such, and then the combo should come normally on top of it.
Okay, thanks.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. There are no further questions at this time. Please continue, sir.
Thank you, Bella. We are not going to close our Q&A session, and with this, we will complete our conference today. We want to thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.